Welcome back to Three Black Dots with Dr. Tiffany, Dr. Karen, and Dr. Zanetta.
All right, so I gotta ask y'all a question.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
I gave Grand Round at MD Anderson this week.
Oh, good. I didn't know that.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
Thank you. Department of Radiation and combined with their diversity inclusion group or whatever at the institution. And, you know, it was really hard because I was on my laptop. So my talk was about, you know, the importance of diversity and inclusion, why it should matter, and some strategies around that. You know, I wanted to go up in there like, you know, fist raised, talk about Black Lives Matter, but I knew I couldn't kind of do that. So I kind of just gave the general spiel that I had been giving, you know, with some nuances and kind of some things that were new and tailored. And I did that for the first like 40 minutes or so, but then did kind of say, now here's what I really wanted to do. I really wanted to open this up with saying Black Lives Matter. But I knew that if I did that, I would lose people. And I really felt it was important for the content, at least the approaches, to be heard. I talked a little bit about that. But in the interim, I did want to talk about how some departments in medicine approach diversity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the premise that I set was the reason why diversity is important is particularly Black Lives Matter. So I talked about all the racism and how it led back to slavery. Some people feel that diversity means bringing people of color, which is fine. But a lot of times what they do is they select individuals who are from Africa or from the islands and not necessarily bringing in Black people who are descendants of slaves. Can't remember exactly how I said it. But regardless, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what diversity really means. Let's talk about what it means in the diaspora, but let's also talk about it with respect to whether or not, you know, just having somebody with Black skin is sufficient enough to really address some of the issues of systemic racism within institutions. And in the places that I've been educated and trained at, that I almost feel like there's a conscious decision on the part of recruiters and, you know, whatever, to avoid anyone who doesn't sound like they're coming from an island or Africa.
So are you saying then that you feel like institutions are saying that they're filling the diversity slot by filling it with Black people who are, but not like American Black people who they may be uncomfortable with? Gotcha.
Correct.
Gotcha. I never thought about it from that perspective.
What were you going to say, Z?
I mean, while Z's thinking, I was thinking of it more of the perspective of, well, what does that mean for what we do as physicians out in the community, you know? And I don't think it matters. And so that's kind of what I was getting to. But I see what you're saying of it's like, well, can we say the box is checked without maybe, you know, addressing those issues that Zanetta talked about, the leaky pipeline, for example, right?
Like systemic racism.
Getting to, in the society, getting to those kids that we lose along the way because of education, those things. It's an interesting observation. We have to learn how to fix the pipeline.
Right? Because I almost hate that it's right now, it's almost a zero sum game. Right? You only have so many people that you'll put in these spots right now to check your box. And I think right now, you know, our educational system it's just not good. And I see it with my kids now, just the differences in education. It's almost scandalous, the difference in education that we're getting and the things that we're finding out that we just didn't know about just by being in the right place. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that could be true, but I can tell you that there are very bright and talented Black folks who are descendants of slaves in this country, all over the place. And it's just a matter of finding them and getting them to college, right? Getting them finished up with college, I mean, high school, and go to college. Because, but that's where it takes some effort. And again, I think that the easy way in some ways is to, like you said, to go where these kids are getting the good education and whatever. And so we're still not affording opportunity. There are still so many Black children, descendants of slaves, who are not given the opportunity, you know, to build wealth and to get the education that they need because somebody else has taken that spot. And it's not to be divisive, because I think there's enough space for everybody. There really is. But I feel like what I see is programs, they don't want to put forth that effort. You know, I must say, Brenda Armstrong at Duke was the bomb. Okay. That woman scoured the country looking for folks and candidates who she could actually groom to come to Duke. And she spent her time and her money and her energy doing that because she, number one, knew that there were individuals who would never even think about coming to Duke. Number one, because it's in the South, right? So, you know, people might go to Harvard faster than they'll go to Duke just because it's north versus south. You know, it was a very different experience. It was amazing in the medical school. Mm-hmm. Such a vastly different experience because I had Black physicians around me who understood. We had a shared experience. And I'm trying to think, there probably was one or two of the physicians who were not descendants of slaves. The majority of them, when I'm thinking about it, you know, the ones that I was close with and that I had relationships with, the majority of the Black physicians at Duke who were on faculty were actually descendants of slaves. They were not, you know, individuals from other countries, although there were a few. And I'm still actually in contact with them as well. But I just, you know, I the question that you raised, though, Tiffany, or the point, you know, I do wonder if there are cultural differences. I do wonder if there's a difference in terms of how we engage the community. But I haven't done that research or haven't seen any research around it.
I haven't either. But then I think that gets to what Zanetta is saying about splitting hairs, right? Because then you could say, okay, so you're a Black American doctor, but you grew up middle class, or, you know, in the case of our kids, even privileged. In the case of me, middle class, you know, very comfortable. And so by the same argument, you could say, all right, so who are you to go into, you know, a community that is disadvantaged? What do you know about that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, though, but you have stories from your family, right?
Sure.
I think that goes far.
So then are we going to do a litmus test of like, well, prove that you...
their person's Blackness.
Can go right. You know, like, is this what we're getting back to? Like, prove that you...
Right.
Have some kind of knowledge of this area, either by personal lived experience or family experience or something.
Right.
To go into this community. And I think that's not the way to do it. You know, it's the same conversation we've had about by us saying that there's not enough Black doctors to go around. Does that mean that, you know, all Black patients need a Black doctor? No, right? It is about doctors recognizing the need for cultural competency, right? And examining potential bias and examining how this plays into medical practice. It is about that, but I don't think it's about making people prove that they're enough of something to work with a disadvantaged population.
And I will say at my HBCUs, we were all the same. I think honestly, there was more of a difference whether you were from Louisiana or Texas.
Well,
you know, or if you're from New York. I think some of like immigrant, African, Caribbean, all that kind of went out the window because we were just there. And even at Meharry, like we know their back. I knew my classmates' backgrounds, but I can't say that any one person was different, you know, because of it.
Fascinating. Wow. It's so interesting because my experience is so very different. When I look at, you know, some of my colleagues, and we are very good friends, and you know, but I look at their drive and the way that they view themselves and the way that they navigated the educational system. They themselves, they had no, there was no, they believe themselves to be equal, right? And again, that may be your experience. I just don't have that. And maybe that's what it is. I mean, maybe it's my deficit. I just feel like I have imposter syndrome all the time because of all of the baggage that I have, you know?
Well, I will say, and I keep going back to my HBCUs.
Well, that's a separate issue, though.
Right. Because I think that's why, for some people, HBCUs are so important. Because it can, to a certain degree, be an equalizer. You know, because honestly, it was at Grambling that I knew that, hey, you know what? I may not be X, Y, and Z, but darn it, I was able to navigate my way onto the homecoming court. And even though that may not seem like much, you know, when you do that, you get to meet people. You get to talk to people. And there are things, if you want to try to make it, it helps you with identity. And so I think when I left, by the time I left Meharry, I knew who the heck I was, and I was confident in that. One of the disadvantages is when you go into an environment when no one cares about you, then, you know, you may struggle a little bit. But I think as far as identity and self-worth, that's what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think everyone needs that. I don't think everyone needs it. I think it was helpful for me.
So I guess what's the real issue? Is the real issue just that you can see the difference in Black people who aren't reared here in the mindset, and then it can make us look at ourselves and the people we know and just like how different the mindset is being raised here or there? Or is the issue that, you know, the institutions aren't doing enough to bring us along? Or is the issue just personal that like you can see that, like, you know, imposter syndrome plagues you, plagues me, plagues everybody, I would imagine, women to some extent, but have it.
So I think, you know, it's really, and number one, I think that the issue is that if we want to address the legacy of slavery and racism in this country, that ideally one of the ways that we would do that is make reparations, if you will. And one way to make reparations through education, and really making sure that we are using the education to really bring forth and bring up the individuals who may not have had the opportunities, right? And so I don't care if it means that your father worked really hard and worked hard to send you to college, and you were able to get to college, but then you get closed out of a medical school, you know, it doesn't matter, right? You know, I think that there are going to be differences in terms of, you know, where families are in terms of their journey, even if you're a descendant of slave. But we know that in general, there are a lot of Black and brown families, frankly, who, you know, are marginalized and don't have the opportunities because of where they live. Those social determinants of health, the education is not good enough necessarily to even give them the opportunities, or people tell them over and over and over again that they're not good enough. I see that over and over again. There are people who are brilliant who are told that you shouldn't apply to medical school, or you shouldn't go to that college, or you shouldn't do this or that. And that is, to me, the systemic racism that is pervasive. But what I can tell you is that I have seen that immigrant families who come in, I see them, the way that they talk to their kids. You know, my girlfriend is a prime example. You're better than everybody, or you're just as good as everybody else. I mean, my parents didn't have that conversation with me. Maybe yours did. But I feel like there can still be this sense of inequity and inequality. I'm going to say inequality, you know, for Blacks or descendants of slaves. And I like Zanetta's point of saying that going to an HBCU can be an equalizer. I think that that's a very interesting perspective. But how many Black students get to do that?
Well, I mean, what's the stats for Black physicians? What is it, like 50, 60%? What percentage of Black physicians went to Howard or Meharry? It's over 50%.
It might be closer to 40 now, but yeah, you're right.
Okay.
I mean, if you look overall, I mean, at current numbers. But what's fascinating is that we're looking at some of the numbers too, and looking that probably about 60% of them are kind of Black.
They're immigrants.
They're immigrant population.
Yeah.
So that's where this is coming from for me, because I'm like, I'm looking at the data. I'm like, wow. we're still not, you know, I mean, there is a poor proportion of people, but I do think that culture is important. And the reason why I'm saying that is I remember being in clinic and I asked for a Spanish language interpreter and a white man showed up and I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. And he's doing his thing. And by the time my encounter was finished, patient encounter, I actually had to pull him aside and say, you know, you were not very culturally appropriate with this patient. I would not use him as an interpreter from there on, because he had language, but he didn't understand the culture, you know? And I do wonder, and again, I don't know, because I haven't seen data, I haven't researched this, but I do wonder if there are some, if culturally, I wonder how Blacks, you know, if Blacks in Winston-Salem are going to a doctor, they can tell that they're immigrant. What is their perception of that? Do they feel like they're, that's doctors like me, you know?
We have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, it's interesting. So I can only think about that in terms of my parents who don't like to go to the doctor. And so my mom likes her primary care physician. This is the only physician I've ever heard her like speak complimentary of, right? He's a white physician. And my mom says he listened to her and he had the office call and check on her one time. And just those little things were enough for her. So I think that still, you know, I still think that patients know when you care about them.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what that looks like.
What your background is.
No matter what your background is. I do think that, you know, sometimes if there are similarities, there can be just a natural affinity. But I think that people just want to be taken care of. But I think within our community, one of the biggest things that we can do is representation. So even if you're coming from a community that may not have some of the resources, I mean, at least just seeing more people like you in positions of power, I think that's incredibly important.
But what does that mean, people like you? So, for instance, I look mm-hmm. at our first Black president, son mm-hmm. of immigrants. I look at our first Black VP, daughter of immigrants. What does Black like me mean?
So you know, so I can only talk about myself, right?
Yep.
Granted, I've wanted to be a doctor since I was, you know, very young. But I do have a doctor in my family, right? My cousin went to Meharry. I remember when I was in like the fifth or sixth grade, him coming, you know, coming home for Christmas with a Meharry shirt on and like a Meharry sticker on his truck. And I was like, what is Meharry? Right. And so even if it's not someone who's, you know, far off, I think even within your community, seeing people that, you know, it doesn't have to be Barack Obama, but a lot of people talk about, you know, when Black communities were, when they changed after integration and you lost the dentists and the doctors and the entrepreneurs within the communities and how that harms the Black community. Because even though you weren't, you know, you may be coming from a poor family, everyone lived in the same kind of vicinity. Right. So there was representation that you could see and you knew. But I will tell you that I have not on a larger scale like you, Karen, but on a smaller scale, tried to find students for certain things. I'll give you an example. So when I was in Winston, there was a summer program that was at Wake Forest, and it was like a week long program that cost a couple thousand dollars. And we wanted to have Black students, and we were basically giving them these spots. We just needed students. And I was begging schools, find me students who are in, first I went to the AP courses, right? I went to the AP teachers within Winston-Salem and said, hey, give me some of your students they can participate in this program. I come to find out there was like one or two Black students in a biology or chemistry AP class, right? And, that the Black students, they weren't being triaged to the AP classes. They were being triaged to the community school.
Correct.
And taking community college credit that wasn't as difficult. And I mean, it's just, so I was like, are you kidding me right now? So we're already triaging these kids. I think that's the point that you're making, Karen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you're right. This all goes to the leaky pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly what you said. Because you're right. I was the only Black person in all of my AP courses, you know, in high school, right? And I was in a really good school district, but I also, there were only a handful of us Blacks who were there. But, you know, this is really important to me because I want to make sure that if I'm going to do this thing, you know, if I'm going to try to create opportunities for individuals, I need to be clear-minded on what that means, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I want to, you know, be exclusive of people, but I really want to be inclusive because I feel like right now the way that programs and institutions are trying to check their diversity checkboxes, they go to the easiest thing, right? Or in some ways they feel like, oh, they're smarter. I've heard that, you know, Africans, they're smarter, right? Or people who are immigrants, they're going to be smarter than the Blacks who are descendants of slaves. There's still that racist tenet that is pervasive in our society that assumes that Blacks who are descendants of slaves are less than or not smart. It's not oftentimes vocalized, but I have heard. I mean, it's amazing what you hear. And so I just want to be thoughtful about how to move this needle forward. How do you change that dynamic? How do you change the paradigm? How do you change the fact that there are really bright Black students who aren't given the same opportunities that, like you said, are being triaged to go to this community college, but not recognizing that. And they might think it's a cool thing because they're going to college, right? They're getting college credits.
Right. It's the pipeline. And so I feel like this is so fascinating because the truth is a lot of the stuff that we're trying to solve in medicine has to come from outside of medicine.
Right.
Right. Because we're talking about a leaky pipeline going back to, you know, elementary, middle school, high school. The doctors can't fix that. You know what I mean? Like, this is why I'm saying we need everyone to know and to really have a spotlight on what the issues are around disparities in medicine, because it takes so much more to fix it than just what we can do as physicians in sort of our medical silos. I think what we can do, you know, when it comes to that, is representation matters. I don't know that if you're if you're a kid that's 10, if you really care or would even make, you know the difference between seeing me in a white coat and seeing my friend from Jamaica in a white coat. I don't think it matters. I think they see a Black woman in a white coat and the image of having a representation, right? That this is possible for you is what's important there. You know, at that level, I think, you know, Zanetta and I talk about this all the time that, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And she and I have talked a lot about what that means and what your interpretation is. To me, what that means is not necessarily tied to my job, right? So at first it was like, well, that means that I got to give 110% to my job, and that's what that means. But really, my thoughts on that have evolved to like, you know, I think it means that I need to be available to go out and volunteer. I need to be available to go out and speak in the community. I need to go out, you know, and be able to go to the elementary school, you know, whoever wants to see a Black doctor in their elementary school talk about whatever, that like, I need to make time and space for that, right? And so, I think it means taking a look at what collectively, you know, those of us who are the Black doctors who do want to move the needle, thinking outside of more of just what we do in our day-to-day medical lives and really needing to get involved in other ways, you know.
You're about to say advocacy and policy, aren't you?
I was about to say it. And what I really, you know, admire.
Yes.
Because it's not for me. Everything ain't for everybody, as we know. You know, like, if you called me today and said, go talk to kindergartners about, like, smoking and have them breathe through a straw and jump up and down, I'd do that in a heartbeat. You might not, Karen. But if they called me and said, come address the Hill political party on whatever, I'd be like, nah, I got a
date with some 5-year-olds.
For me, that's not me. But you know what I mean? And so that's the thing. I think really when we think about what it means to have privilege, right? Mm-hmm. As Black professionals, we're doctors, but you know, take it, a bird on the street tells me that other people listen to our podcast. So it doesn't matter. You could be whatever you are, professor, accountant, you know, a lawyer, the issues are pervasive. But mm-hmm. I think what is common when I talk to, you know, Black talented people who have had professional success is a lot of people feel that weight of to right. whom much is given. Much is expected, right? And that might be it for some people. But on the other hand, it might be stuff like this about showing up for representation, about, you know, doing things that are a little bit outside of what your job title is and what your 9-to-5 is, because kids in elementary school need to see Black doctors, Black lawyers, Black accountants. The politicians mm-hmm. need to hear from, you know, Black professionals. Community groups need to hear from Black professionals. That's my view. I don't remember what the question was, but anyway.
No, that's good. I love it. But you started out saying, and this is kind of, it goes back to our conversation around social determinants of health.
Yeah.
Where we know that the medical system itself only accounts for about 20-25% of what health is. That
right.
all of those other things
yep.
extraneous right. to medicine that are really critical and vital to health and well-being of communities. And
yeah.
so to your point, I love the analogy of just saying, you know, people just need to see individuals, you know, who are doing things, right? Individuals who may look like them. Again, they might not have any clue what their backgrounds are. Doesn't matter whether they're poor or kind of in the ghetto and, you know, whatever, grew up that way, or maybe were, you know, a teen mom or a homeless person, or whether or not that they grew up as a prince or they had, you know, lots of wealth growing up. It doesn't matter. If the issue is allowing children to see examples of people holding positions of influence and or power. And I think that is one of the privileges, to go back to Zanetta's word, that immigrants oftentimes will have, Black immigrants in particular, if they're coming from nations where they have seen professions, mm-hmm. professionals who are Black and look like them. I think that is a huge difference, and that's perhaps what maybe we can try to encourage people to do, you know, go back to school, right? Go back to uh-huh. these kids and go back to the areas where, you know, there may be some young people that you can spark an interest in whatever that career may be, or an education in general. It's really good.
Right, because the thing is, like, okay, well, if the issue is that, you know, I mean, it's not an issue, but if you notice that, you know, immigrants from other countries have a different mindset because they've been exposed to it, they've been exposed to professionals, mm-hmm. then that puts onus on us, because now we're the professionals. Like, we're not the kids anymore, right? Like, we're the professionals. And so what does that mean? That means we need to get out and be seen.
And you know, so I'm also thinking about this from, you know, my high school, right? So. Mm-hmm. I mean, goodness, we were 99.54% Black. I remember people would always come and talk to us. You would have people everywhere from maybe politicians to, I remember one time they had kids from like the juvenile detention facilities come and talk to us. And I'm just trying to think about how I felt. Sometimes I felt like people were talking at us.
Right.
They were talking at me and almost like, well, I mean, you're in such despair and be like me and you can be better. Right. And so like, I always felt like I was all right and I was going to make it.
Right.
And I think I did better from people who were within the community, like my coach, my track coach had a huge influence on me, probably without even realizing it. Like in high school, I cared more about track than I did about academics. Even though I did well, I loved track so much, but it was those lessons on the track that kind of helped me through. So, you know, I think to Tiffany's point, having the energy to be a part of the community, you have to have the time and energy, because we can go back and talk till we're blue in the face, but I'll be honest with you. I don't know that me going back to my high school and saying, hey, look, I'm great. You know, I have made it. And, you know, I can lay in my golf course backyard. Like, I don't think that that has the same impact as someone like my sister or some of these other people who are ingrained in the community and who, you know, are there for you.
I think that there is value in both. I think that there is value in you going back to your high school.
Right.
Someone who's from that, you know, from that high school, from that community, and not saying, hey, look, mama, I made it. And now I have a golf course in my backyard.
Right.
More of just like, you know, you can achieve what you want.
What you want. Exactly.
Period. Exactly. You know, and that's it.
But no, I agree.
I think you said something with your mom about really what matters is like if you patients, people, whatever, want to know is if you actually care about them. Right.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, I think about some of the volunteering that I've done over the years, like, you know, I've worked in homeless clinics for years. I did mission trips. I did all kinds of stuff. And I was never homeless. You know what I mean? I had never experienced any of those communities, but it didn't matter. Like, you know, I was there and I wanted to be there and I wanted to help. So I don't know that it has to be that you have to share the experience. I think that it matters if you care and if you want to help, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was an earlier point though, just because my Wi-Fi gave up. So I was like, oh, and another thing.
Three Black Docs is not intended as medical advice. All opinions are our own. Three Black Docs is produced by Wings Productions.
Like what you hear? Make sure you rate and subscribe. Three Black Docs is available wherever you get your podcasts.